Good morning, folks. How are you doing today? Everybody having fun in Phoenix, Arizona?
Absolutely.
Woohoo! just some admin stuff. You've heard it all week. Please, if you have cell phones, for the courtesy of the class, put them on vibrate or turn them off. And questions will be handled in this session as we roll along. So we'll go straight through. Please try to not have all the questions. Let other people have so he can move and get through the material. If you'll do that for us, it'll be fair to everyone. Again, we're glad to have you. My name is Mark Munden. I'm with a broker in charge of North Carolina M Brokers, and I'm the introducer today. And we have Stefan Spencer as our speaker today. Stefan is the founder and president of NetConcept, 11-year-old web agency specializing in SEO, e-commerce, email marketing, website design, and evaluation. The clients include such corporate giants as AOL, Yahoo, Verizon, Superpages.com, Kohl's, and the Home Shopping Network, down to small businesses and startups. Stefan is a sought-after speaker presenting globally to organizations such as American Marketing Associates, the DMA, the Search Engine Strategies. He is a contributing writer to publications like DM News, Catalog Age, Multi-Channel Merchant, Practical E-commerce, and MarketingPros.com. Stefan is a co-author of the analyst report, The State of Engine Marketing, Search Engine Marketing 1.0, published by Catalog Age. In his spare times, Stefan blogs on www.stefanspencer.com and also is the founder of Insight, an online B&B directory. So at this time, if you would, help me welcome Stefan Spencer.
Thank you. So you all can hear me, right?
Yeah.
Great. Okay, so we have a lot to cover, but what I want to do is I don't want to take it at too fast of a pace because this is getting started. I don't want you to feel overwhelmed, okay? So just jump in and ask any question that you want. Don't feel embarrassed that it might be a silly question or a newbie question because, I mean, that's what we're all here for, is to learn, okay? So what I'd like to do to get started, of course, we have to start with the obligatory funny cartoon here. You don't respond to my email anymore. When I reply to email, it attracts more email. I'm trying to break the vicious cycle. Well, I'll leave you voicemails. Let me know how that works out for you. Right? You ever feel like that? You know, it's like, I wish this, I could just throw this whole email thing away. Well, let me ask you a couple questions just to get a sense of where you're at in email marketing. What is your level of experience? So if I could ask you to rate yourself in a gradient of 1 to 5, 1 being never done it before, 5 being a pretty well expert at it, who's number 1? Okay, you're in the right place. Who feels that they're somewhere at 3 or above? Anyone? Okay. Okay, a few of you. Great. Well, good news is you'll all learn something. Next question. What are your most pressing concerns about email marketing? Okay, so I can't have you actually check the box on this screen here, but let's get a show of hands. How about getting and keeping permission? Is that a hot button for you guys? Yep. Okay. How about getting the right offer? Anyone? Okay. How about targeting the right audience? Okay, that's a big one. Copywriting? Yep, a few of you. Okay. Design? Yep. Design, okay, that's pretty good. Tracking and reporting, making sure that it's actually working for you, okay? And getting it to go viral, getting other people to spread the message, okay? Just a few of you? Yep. That's a much harder one, right? Because we have to get all the basics right, and then we have to come up with something so clever, so innovative, so funny, or whatever, that people just feel compelled to send it to all their friends. That's hard to do. Okay, so let's start here with why. Why are we here? Well, it's a very powerful medium, even though it is losing some of its shimmer because of spam. It's getting worse and worse, the whole spam problem. So we'll address why this is a problem and how to get past it, right? There's spam filters that are thwarting your every step at getting your email messages marketed to the right people. So first of all, as far as why to do it, critical mass, well, there are a lot of people on email, right? Most everybody who is on the internet is on email. So it's a great equalizer. Response rates are still pretty good. It's also a low-cost medium, right? Very low cost, 1/10 the cost per communication than direct mail. It's also a relationship builder. It's a way for you to reach out and touch people in ways that you can't just relying on your website alone, So we can reach today's consumer, except it's getting harder. We have things like corporate scandals, you know, things like Enron and so forth. It's eroding trust. People don't trust businesses, from the small business to the large corporate. There's growing resistance to the whole concept of email. It should be, in the consumer's mind, something that's just for them and their close associates, their business colleagues, their friends and relatives. So this whole idea of whitelisting only a certain number of people and then blocking everyone else is gaining popularity, which makes your job a lot harder. People receive a lot of email. They just get deluged with email, right? 100 emails a day. How many get more than, say, 30 emails a day? Okay, yep. More than 50? Yep. More than 100? Okay, I feel sorry for you guys, but I'm in that club as well. All right, so it feels overwhelming, doesn't it? Does it feel overwhelming to you? So your consumers, your guests, your prospects, they're feeling the same pain. You want to be treated as people, not as a mass market. And what is email marketing usually about when you're doing it on the cheap? It's about blasting out some generic message to everybody, and that's not the way to get people to sign up and for a long-term relationship with you, for an email newsletter, or to become a guest at your B&B. So people want to be treated as people. They want you to talk to them on an individual basis. They want to feel like it's personal communication. And also spam. Spam is really in the eye of the beholder, right? Because what we have here is the opportunity for the consumer to just turn you in as a spammer just because they feel that you're a spammer. That's just their gut feeling about it. They don't have to have anything other than just that feeling, and they can turn you in. And that can make a whole lot of problems for you. So coping with the deluge. So 32% of email messages are official spam, right? So spam is in the eye of the beholder, but there are some criteria that at least some of these email kind of vendors and some of the research firms out there have as criteria. So 32% is actually quite a low number according to that that particular study. I believe it to be a lot higher than that. Costs $8.9 billion in lost productivity annually. I believe that to be higher as well. Spam filters in Outlook, Hotmail, AOL, et cetera. You know, all your ISPs, they all have spam filtering technology. Anti-spam tools also in corporations. So if you've got people on your email lists at corporations, you're having to pass through their corporate email firewalls as well. And this is actually an underrepresentation too. 15% of permission-based marketing messages are wrongly blocked. I've seen studies estimating that to be all the way up to 33% or 38%. So it's pretty bad out there. Worst thing you can do, of course, is you can say, my message is not spam, and then you're pretty much assured that you're going to be in the spam box. Well, let's figure out what we need to accomplish here, right? So this is no different from any other marketing strategy in that we have to figure out what our objectives are, how we're going to measure success, what our kind of marketing messages are going to be, our unique selling proposition, USP. All those things have to be defined before we can really get serious about this. So, yes. Yep. So let me repeat the question. So the question is there an advantage, because currently you've got an email address at your domain name.com. You get a lot of spam coming in. How do you stem the tide a bit? Is it possible to have the search engines or portals like Google with their Gmail or AOL or Yahoo Mail, have any of those guys do a better job at spam blocking by signing up and using that as your main email address? Right, you're in at yahoo.com or at gmail.com. Well, of course, Google has a very good spam blocking algorithm, much better than just your average ISP. Your average ISP is using probably something like Spam Assassin, which is not bad. It blocks some amount of spam, but it leaves a lot unchecked as well. I mean, it can't catch everything. Google, they're pretty smart. They've got a lot of PhDs working there over time to get these things right. So I have heard some really good results from people who have switched to using a Gmail account.
Is there a disadvantage, a marketing disadvantage, by not having your email on your own domain?
Okay, so is there a marketing disadvantage of not having your email at your in domain? I would say yes, because for one thing, you are tied in to that particular provider, right? So if you wanted to switch from Yahoo or AOL or Gmail, you'd have to alert everybody that you're switching your email account. That's pretty painful. You know, I know people that are with AOL years later, even though they don't like AOL and never have, they're still with them because that AOL email address is out there all over the world. Yeah, so that is the downside. You can actually have your domain name. With some of these email providers, I believe Gmail is one of them. You can actually have your domain name as the email address. You know, so you know, info ad or whatever at yourdomainname.com, and it actually goes through Gmail. So that's, I know they do it, but I don't know that. I'm sure AOL doesn't, and I doubt that Yahoo does it. Yeah. Okay. So spam, of course, is a hot topic. What is spam? Well, it's anything that is unsolicited commercial email, right? It is, like I said, in the eye of the beholder. So if they feel that you don't have permission, they're going to nail you. They can easily report you to spam cop, which will then cause you a whole lot of hurt, right? All it takes are a couple of reports in from spam cop, and you're going to end up on a whole lot of blacklists, and then your emails are not going to get through. Typical spam, the real evil stuff, is bogus in numerous ways. One, it has a bogus sender address. So if you hit reply, it would actually bounce. It wouldn't arrive to a real mailbox. It has bogus unsubscribe instructions because they really don't care about you unsubscribing. And it has bogus offers a lot of times. A lot of it just is completely bogus. Spam also, ensure recipients don't misconstrue your message as spam. Well, there's some ways that we can do that. One, of course, is to get permission and make sure that they know that you have their permission. So if you have collected their email address, I hope you've collected the fact that they have signed up through such and such web page or through whatever means that they did. Right? If they filled out a card that you're in, I hope you have the source recorded. I hope you have the date and time recorded, right? Because you'll need that. In case they say, you do not have my permission, you've never garnered it from me, you know, prove it. Well, you need that data. Yes?
Mm-hmm. And then you send that out, but you didn't ask any of those questions. Can you still use that email address to send them the newsletter or something?
Okay, so what you're saying, your question is, you didn't collect that information already, and you'd like to know if you can still mark it to them?
Well, they knew we were getting their email address to send them a confirmation.
Right. Oh, okay, so this is for confirmation.
Well, we sent the confirmation. Mm-hmm. Now we want to use that email.
Okay, so you're going to have to get them to, so that, let me repeat the question. So you've sent them a confirmation, and you'd like to now get them on an email list to send them communications on an ongoing basis. Okay, so you have to get their permission for that. If you did not get their permission when they first booked with you, right, so you send them a confirmation, that's fine, that's part of the business transaction. But if you did not give them the opportunity to opt in at that point for ongoing email communications, you're going to have to go back to them and ask them for that. And if they don't give a positive response, then you're going to have to leave it go because, I mean, the whole concept around effective email marketing is that it's opt-in.
Can you send them an email and ask them to opt-in?
Yes, you can, but you got to be really careful about that, really, really careful. We'll talk more about that in a little bit later on. Yes?
You can phone them, or is that exactly?
Yes, you can phone them, or you can send them a postcard, or you can email them once, you know, and under certain circumstances in a certain sort of way. I mean, I wouldn't be as worried about the legislation because the legislation, the can spam legislation, is opt out, right? So you have some leeway there. But from a standpoint of not getting spam cop reports in and not getting blacklisted and so forth, I would play this game strictly opt in. Okay. So opt in really is just getting that recipient to agree to receive your communications in advance. Opting out is where you didn't get permission in advance and you give them the opportunity to unsubscribe you know, at any point during that communication process, but you're going to continue to send them your email messages until they say stop. So that's opt out. Hand raisers, people who say, yes, I want to opt in, are a lot more likely to not only tolerate your emails, but to respond favorably to them. There's a great book by Seth Godin. Anyone heard of Seth Godin? Okay, he's an incredible marketer. He's got some great books. I recommend every one of them. Permission marketing is one of them. That's for email marketing. and other ones about just viral marketing and creative sort of marketing strategies and so forth. A few of my favorites are The Purple Cow. Anyone heard of The Purple Cow? Yeah, it's a great book. And what would be another one I recommend? Oh, there's one you can download for free off of the internet. It's an ebook. You could also buy it in print if you wanted, but it's called Unleashing the Idea Virus. That one's about viral marketing. So that one's available at, I believe, ideavirus.com. But if you type in Unleashing the Idea Virus into Google, you'll easily find it. How do you improve the odds that your visitor to your site will join your list? Well, here's a few tips. One is to provide numerous opt-in opportunities. Every chance that you get, any form or feedback opportunity, let's say, for example, you have a reservation request form, you should have an opt-in question on there with a little tick box. Don't tick it already for them, because that's opt-out then, right? So you leave it for them to tick. You'll get less uptake, but the people who bother to tick it will be more receptive to your emails. If you tick it for them, some will miss that. They'll then accuse you of being a spammer. They'll submit your email to SpamCop, and you'll get blacklisted. So numerous opt-in opportunities. Any place that you have where you request information or have request them to communicate with you or comment or whatever. Make sure the amount of work required to sign up is minimal. A way that I like to handle it is to only ask for their email address. It's the only bare essential bit of information that you need, isn't it? So their email address. Yes, it'd be nice to get their name. Yes, their location. Yes, 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 to all these other things. But if you lower the barrier to entry, then you'll get more people signing up. So the way I handle it is on the confirmation screen, okay, they put their email address in, they hit the button or the return key. Next page that they get, you are signed up. Now, if you please fill out this additional bit of information, I've got 5 additional questions for you. Please fill these out. This will help me to tailor the offers and so forth to you and your particular needs and interests and location, right, et cetera, et cetera. So give them some additional information about what you're going to do for them. You know, just a couple sentences, something enticing that says, yes, I should fill this out, and they probably will. Place the email list, sign up on all forms, as I said, and also, of course, on your homepage above the fold. So where people don't have to scroll, the fold is where everything after that on the screen, on the page, it doesn't show up on the screen until you scroll. So you want your email sign-up form, like I said, just a little thing with the email address and sign up now or something like that, above the fold, high up on the page where they can see it without scrolling. Yes? No, opting out is not as okay as opting in. So if you get people to opt in, they're much more receptive to your email communications, and they're less likely to turn you in as a spammer. Okay, and you don't have to actually be a spammer. They just have to feel like you're a spammer. So you could have a totally legitimate email communication, and you could actually have had permission from them. And they could still turn you into spam cop, and the onus is on you to prove otherwise that you're not a spammer, which is hard to do. Yes. Okay, so the question was, what is the process to turn in a spammer? Let me just walk you through it real quick. It's quite easy. So there's a website called spamcop.net. So this is it. There is an email address that you can forward the spam to. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but it's listed on the website here. By the way, this is a very useful website for email marketers as well, because you can see if your domain, your IP address is on the blacklist or not, and your email service provider, if you're using an email service provider. So that's pretty useful. How do they make their money? Well, actually, it's pretty interesting. They were founded by an email technology company, a security company that builds these corporate email firewalls. So they got lots of visibility. It's a company called Ironport. So they build these expensive kind of email filtering appliances for big corporations that spend tens of thousands of dollars on it. And so the whole world knows about Ironport because of SpamCop. So that was a good marketing strategy for them. So they give this free service, they get their name out there, and so forth. So this is the way you report spam. You just click on that Report Spam tab on the, let me just move that so I can see that a bit better. on the left-hand side on the top there. And it just gives you some information on how it works. So first thing you have to do is, register for the free reporting service. So you have to actually verify that you're a real person first with them. So pretty easy process. For somebody who doesn't like spam, they know all about this site and they just forward emails all the time to SpamCop. I mean, they don't even think about it. They just think, spam, hit forward, gone. Spam, forward, gone, you know, spam. So you're just going to have like 2 seconds for them to decide that you're a spammer. Okay, well, to get off the blacklist, so that was your question, getting off the blacklist. What's that? How long does it take to get somebody on the blacklist? Well, it's almost immediate, really. It's nearly immediate. Their ISP will get a message. Their ISPs take these SpamCop messages very seriously. If you don't have evidence that that you've gotten permission from them, they will actually remove your email, remove your account from their ISP. So ISPs take this very seriously, and as far as if you're on the receiving end of this because somebody decided that you're a spammer, it's quite difficult to deal with this in a positive way unless you have that evidence that you are not a spammer. Right? So time and date of when you got their permission, how you got it, whether it was through a particular web page on your site or if it was through an email communication or whatever. Okay, so you need to have that evidence. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Hi, we've just purchased this in, and these are the changes we're making, and come visit us. That would be, if someone were objective to that, they would then send it to this spam cop.
Okay, so question was, let's say you purchased an in, and you want to send an email communication to your house list. Yep, and say, hey, we've just bought the inn, and you've stayed with this inn before, and we just wanted to let you know that we're the new owners, and blah blah blah, and we'd like to have you come back. Well, very possibly, if they feel that you have not gotten permission from them, and this is a problem because you're relying on the last owner of the database, that they did a proper job. What I'd probably do is send it out to a portion of the list first. So I wouldn't send it out to the whole list, and I would see what happens. So if you send it out to, let's say that you have 5,000 people on the list, I might send it out to 500. So at the worst case scenario, maybe you get a couple spam reports. That'd probably be the worst case. Maybe you get one. Well, you have an existing business relationship with them because they've paid money. They are a customer. Yes, pretty much. I mean, it would be you're on much better ground than having no relationship with them. Yeah. Okay, but it's not foolproof. Oh, let me give you the mic so that this goes on the recording.
I would imagine under our circumstances, most people who are sending out email newsletters are sending them out to their previous guests. And, I know that when we take a reservation, we ask for their email address every single time. Never, ever have asked if we have permission to send them an update newsletter. I've done this once through my own server when we were a new company, and got a couple of, please remove me from your email list kind of stuff. And, every time that happens, you go in and you take them out of the database. But basically, I think that's what we're talking about is newsletters and updates to guests. I don't know about further marketing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's a very interesting point that you make. I would suggest that if you're relying solely on your list of existing guests, that you're really selling yourself short. You've got lots of opportunities to build relationships with and market to other people besides previous guests. Okay, this is the thing. It's that I love this expression. It goes, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always gotten. So, if you want to keep marketing to your guests, then exactly.
Yeah.
Well, how do you get people to that are brand new, that have never heard of you before, to be on your email list? One of your best ways is through your website. So let's say that you get some good visibility in the search engines. Right? You've done some search engine optimization. You get some visibility. What you don't want to have happen is for people to come visit your website and say, well, that looks interesting, and I might check out this in another 6 months when I'm actually planning my trip. But for now, I'm just going to leave it. You want them to leave their email address so that you can start building that relationship. So there needs to be some sort of hook for them that says, you know, okay, I'll give them my email address. I'll give them permission to be on the list.
With these new tracking services.
Yep, okay. So the question is about, can I get the email addresses of the people that look like they have high interest because they've spent a long time on my site or what have you, or they came in from a particular directory? No. Not until they've actually filled out the little form on your site that says, I opt in and here's my email address. You don't know their email address until they've done that. So until then, you have the refer where they came in from, right? But you just, it's this anonymous person. So this anonymous person who came in from Insight or bedandbreakfast.com or whatever, you want to associate that referrer to the email address once they supply it.
Would it be a good idea to have on your
Yeah, well, that's the whole point of having the email sign-up form is to get people to opt in for your marketing messages and for your opportunities. When they look at the website, yes. So, in fact, I would suggest you have that little form that's just, you know, email address, sign up now sort of thing, and a little message above it of what you get, you know, special offers, discounts, you know, favorite recipes, whatever your value propositions are. Have that on every page of the site.
Are there forms that standard forms or forms that people have done and share with us?
We can just have a look around, sure. Yeah, absolutely. But the shorter and the sweeter, the better. So did you have your hand up first? I don't remember. Yep.
What about people that sign on for newsletters for bedandbreakfast.com? Can you use that as permission to send them?
If they've signed up with another email, with another outfit, like bedandbreakfast.com, then no, because they didn't opt in for your company's list. Even though you're part of their directory, right? Because they've signed up for that list, with that company, that's the business relationship between bedandbreakfast.com and that recipient, and you're not privy to that. You can't break into the conversation. Yes, question. Personally, I hate it. Okay, so just let me repeat it.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, so that's on the... So let me repeat it so it goes on the recording because this is being recorded. So email forms are just, hey, wait a minute, don't leave my site yet, a pop-up thing that comes up when you're about to leave the site, right? I hate them. A lot of people hate them, and I would avoid them. You know, it's perhaps you're going to get some people to agree to sign up at that point, but you're going to get a lot of angry people in the process as well. Yeah, I'll come back to you guys. Yeah.
Exactly that. Where does that form go to for us to retrieve it?
Where does the form go to? Okay.
Okay,
yeah. So the question is, where do these forms go when you get them filled out? Well, ideally, you're going to use an email service provider that keeps a database for you because then it's all in a nice central place. The worst thing that you can do from a standpoint of maintenance and administration is to have it come in as an email to you, right? Because then it's not databased. You can't do queries on it and say, show me everybody in New Mexico that signed up in 2005. You can't do any of that. Right? It's very difficult to do anything other than just send out your sort of blanket email message to everybody with the same generic content in it. So using an email service provider will give you the opportunity not only to collect that information in the database, and then you have a login, so you can, you know, do queries on it and browse through the list and so forth and have a look and see what's happening, but you can also personalize the email messages. So you can have their first name, you can tailor some of the message based on, you know, what state they're in and things like that. Yeah.
Is there a way to take our existing databases and give that to our internet provider?
Yes, yes. So the question is, can you take an existing database and give that to an internet provider, an email provider, and have them bring it in or import it? Absolutely, absolutely. You know, that's a basic requirement of any service email service provider.
Yeah.
Sure. Let's come back to because I'm conscious of time here. Yes, I want to encourage questions, but we're not getting through many slides here. So let's kind of keep going, and we're going to go online. I have an internet connection here, so we'll actually do some of this during the course of the presentation. But there's a lot of really meaty content I want to make sure we get through as well. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So privacy policy. How many of you have a privacy policy on your website? Only a couple of you. I want every single one of you to be able to raise your hand if I were to ask you this question within 2 weeks. It's not hard. It's just a page on your website with a couple of paragraphs that says, what am I going to do with your information when I collect it? Am I going to share it with all the other B&Bs that are my friends in the particular associations that I'm involved in? Am I going to trade it with other business partners and vendors and so forth? You know, oh, I'll share my list if you share mine. You know, what are you going to do with my information? People are really quite protective of their personal information. They'll feel a lot more comfortable about giving their email address and other personal information away if you have a privacy policy. And that privacy policy says, we do not share email addresses with any third parties, period. End of discussion. You know, it's like, if they feel very comfortable that you're not doing that, you know, you've got really strong language, we're not going to share our information with anybody else, they're going to fill out the form.
Is that what you would recommend?
Yes, I would recommend that it be no sharing with third parties at all. Yeah, there's some companies that have changed their privacy policy midstream and gotten in big trouble with the press over it, like Amazon, Yahoo. You know, so they decide, well, we want to do some other things with this data. Let's just change the privacy policy and see what happens. It doesn't go so well. So privacy policy, it builds trust. It lets them know what you're going to do with the information. It helps improve the likelihood that they're going to fill out the form. So you don't have to have the whole privacy policy listed on a sign-up form. All you have to do is just have a link to the privacy policy. You know, we abide by a strict privacy policy, and the words privacy policy, that's the link to your privacy policy page. And they're just going to feel so much more comfortable filling out that form then. What else can you do to distance yourself from spammers? Of course, spammers don't care about privacy policies. They don't care about opt-in and all that sort of stuff. So what else can we do to further distance ourselves from spammers so that we're not going to get nailed by spam cop? Remind recipients that they've given you permission to contact them. Okay, but do that carefully because a lot of these spams actually say that, so much so that spam filters are keying on particular words that say, you know, we have received your permission or whatever, because it's bogus and a lot of spams say that, and so you'll get in the spam folder if you say that in a particular way. So the words you use are very critical in avoiding the spam filters. Provide an easy way to unsubscribe. Now, there's this urban legend going around. You may have heard it. Don't hit the unsubscribe button. Don't unsubscribe from spams because they'll know that you're a live human and you'll get more and more and more spam from them. Who's heard that? Yeah, oh yeah. So it doesn't matter if it's true or not. The fact that our perception is that that's the case, and so many, you know, if you poll any audience, you'll get the same perception. So perception is almost like reality. So I would say that you have to actually build a trust relationship to make them feel like they can trust your unsubscribe. Which is kind of screwed up, isn't it? So you have to build in some trust language there that says, you know, we'd be really sorry to see you go or whatever. You've been a valued guest or whatever, you know, the relationship is. But if you feel you need to unsubscribe, you know, we'll certainly abide by that. Just click here. Be sure that the reply works. So if I hit the reply button, I want it to go to an email box that doesn't bounce. Have it signed by, yes?
How do you know it bounces?
How do you know it bounces? Because it'll come right back to you. Yeah, so it'll come back with a failed, undeliverable message into your email box. Have it signed by a real person, and as I said, publish and abide by a strict privacy policy.
On that privacy policy, is it okay to have it as a pop-up, or should it be a real page?
It should be a real page. It should not be a pop-up. Yeah, pop-up pages are just evil. All right, so there are two types of what some people describe as a pop-up page. One is a page that opens in a new window, where the target is new, or if you know HTML at all. The other type is an actual pop-up that you can control the size of the window, and you can actually make it pop up at different times, like when you enter a site or leave a site, and do different things besides just clicking on a link. Okay, so that's a pop-up, the traditional sort of advertisement pop-up. You could make a page out of that, like, oh, sign up for my email newsletter or whatever, but there's so many pop-up blockers out there now. You know, if you install the Google toolbar or the Yahoo companion toolbar, any of these other toolbars, they've got a pop-up blocker built right in. And so they'll just, in fact, most web browsers have pop-up blocking ability now too. You know, so it's very unlikely that if you have important content in a pop-up that it will get seen by a lot of people.
I have a question. So far, risk.
Yeah, okay, so So your question is, what is our return on risk? This sounds pretty risky. You've been cautioning through. Okay, so the first thing I want to do is to make sure that you're aware of the kind of sometimes unspoken rules, right, of the email marketing space. Because if you get it wrong, you could get nailed for it. And then you have to change email hosts or whatever and kind of learn from your mistakes and try it again and so forth. But it's not all doom and gloom. There are lots of opportunities as long as you just don't do something stupid.
Do you provide this service for us to be able to call back to
you? We do to a certain extent. Okay, so we're more targeted to kind of do-it-yourselfers than the full-service sort of shop person that wants an email consultant. Right? Okay, so we don't have the bandwidth, as far as human bandwidth, to deal with a lot of people in that way. So we have a service that we kind of, you log in, you can upload your list, you can get people signing up through your website and showing up in the list, and you can do queries, you can send out email campaigns yourself and so forth. But it really is yourself, you're doing it, you know, or your webmaster, whatever. Yeah. Yes. Okay. All right. So the comment was, let's make sure we get through the presentation. And that's fine by me. So let's take a quick look at how not to do an unsubscribe message. There are lots of ways not to do it, such as you'll never unsubscribe, ha, ha, ha. You could do it like United does, which is almost as bad. To unsubscribe from eFares, go to united.com. Click on Update Profile under Planning Travel. Log in with your Mileage Plus number and password. On the Update Profile page, select Email Information. Uncheck the options that correspond to the email you no longer wish to receive. Finally, click on the Submit button at the bottom of the page. Request to unsubscribe to United notifications. It may take up to 1 week to process. That just sucks, you know, to put it bluntly. Yeah. Okay, so now let's see another faux pas that went out. This is actually a real Amazon campaign that they screwed up. I received it. I was, I'm on their list. Look at how it's signed. Remember I said signed by a real person? Do you think this qualifies? Signed by, sincerely, Big Bird, King of the World, Amazon.com. Now clearly they were supposed to reinsert an actual name there, but this went out prematurely. Somebody hit the trigger finger too quickly. Yeah, that was a keeper. I had to show that one off. So be real in your communications, right? You want to build relationships. You want people to feel good about you, that you're a real person with a unique personality, unique value proposition. People want to stay with you. They want to stay at your B&B because they like you and because you have a great property and you have a unique selling proposition. So really develop that voice, that unique personality. Don't just have some generic copy that just sounds like it could come from any website. You ever sign up for an email newsletter and it just seems like the confirmation page that you, or the confirmation email that you get that you're signed up for the email newsletter seems like it's written by the same exact personality-less person, you know, across all the different companies? It's like, where is the sense of humor? Where is the fun? Where is the, you know, where's the personality in this confirmation? You have now signed up for our email newsletter. Welcome. We look forward to blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, ugh. Who cares? So start right there. Start with that confirmation email. Thank you so much for signing up. You know, we're so happy to have you. Blah, 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 blah. You know, sound excited or sound funny or interesting. Somehow engage with them. So relating to their problem, that's important. What are their problems? Are they too busy? Do they feel like they're having a hectic life? You know, do you have some tips for them to kind of slow down? Maybe that could be your whole value proposition until they come to your inn. That you're going to help them figure out ways to slow down and enjoy life. You know, first it's, you know, 1 month it's a, I don't know, some breathing exercise or yoga thing or something, or maybe it's a delicious recipe of something that just it makes you feel good or whatever. You know, it's just something every so often that helps them, you know, kind of deal with whatever problem that you can relate to. First few lines are key, of course. WIIFM, that's what your recipients listen to. What's in it for me? The gift of education, you know, so it's not all about sell, sell, sell. It's about give, give, give. Give something to that consumer. Be honest, always, of course, full disclosure, no hidden advertorials. If there's a particular destination that you want to strongly promote in your email, for example, and it's one there you get a 15% commission, well, if they find out and it looked like you're just, you know, raving on about this wonderful destination and it turns out that they find out that you've been getting some money under the table from them, they're not going to be happy about that, and they're going to post it to 1,000 of their friends, right, on a discussion forum or something. Avoid chest pounding and promotions. This isn't about, as I said, sell, sell, sell. It's about give, give, give. People trust people, not marketing speak. So try to avoid all the marketing speak. Here's one that I kind of like the personality that they've got here. This is Land's End. And they've got a relaxed tone and voice. It really matches their brand, if you're familiar with their brand. And people just tend to like it. Attention to details, important, of course, here. So shoddy workmanship in your email campaign reflects poorly on your business. So things like typos and grammatical errors, you know, big bird, king of the world, those sorts of things, right? Getting your facts wrong, formatting problems, or otherwise illegible or unintelligible is going to really be a strike against you as far as building trust. Here's a great example of that in action. This is an email marketing agency sending out their newsletter. And this is Ream More instead of Read More. So, yeah, I don't think that's too good. I don't think I'd use that agency. And also, they were broken links, those Read More links, to top it off, yeah. This one was a faux pas as well. It doesn't format well in certain email clients. So Jupiter, who sent out this email campaign, should have tested on multiple email clients before they sent it. So we talked about spam cop a lot already. What else can happen if people feel like you're spamming? Well, there's spam vigilantes out there that will hunt you down. They'll call you in the middle of the night, and they'll get all their friends to call you in the middle of the night. They'll send you hateful emails. They'll contact your ISP and insist that they boot you. So yeah, lots of nasty things can happen if people decide that you're a spammer. So, you know, it's really as simple as just delivering value. Deliver value so they don't feel like you're just out there to sell some Viagra pills. Email should be relevant, timely, and beneficial. Value can take the form of many different things, such as newsletters, discounts, contests, last-minute availability, event reminders, invitations, prizes, memberships, coupons or discounts, exclusive sales, free samples, demos, lots of different opportunities, or just useful information, things that make their day a little bit easier or more fun or more enjoyable. Surveys can be an interesting way to engage with the consumer as well, with the recipient, and give them something out of it, a free report or free you know, stay or whatever, if you know, or opportunity, you know, a contest or something where a certain number of people get a free stay by participating in your survey. And you know, if there are things that you send in paper form, confirmation forms, price lists, or what have you, email is a great way to deliver that stuff as well. So there are three main types of outbound email that I'll talk about here. We've got newsletters, we've got promotional messages, and we've got discussion forum posts. Newsletters are your regular ongoing communications. Okay, those are scheduled. They're hopefully sent on a regular basis. You've got your promotional messages, like a special offer at a particular time of year or something, you know, just not as regularly scheduled as a newsletter. And then you have your discussion forum posts, where you're doing a soft sell marketing by participating in discussion forums, right? So Pi has a list of an email list or discussion list, right? How many of you are on that? A forum, yep. Started at, what was it called? There's Getting In, and there's another one. What was it called? I forget. Anyway, so they've got this opportunity for you to participate, and there are lots of opportunities out there for you to participate in forums, add something back to the community, you know, give some free advice, answer people's questions, and then use that opportunity to soft sell your company you're in. So discussion forum posts could include not just web-based forums, but also email discussion lists and Usenet news groups. E-marketers oftentimes overlook these opportunities. I mean, they're not your traditional sort of email marketing as far as sending out a blast to your house list, but it is nonetheless a useful opportunity. There's an unwritten rule here that you've got to respect the non-commercial nature of these forums. Posting some promotional message is not going to be welcome. Your best opportunity here is using your signature line in your soft sell message. At the bottom of your discussion post, where you answer somebody's question about, you know, whatever, you could put a short little message there about what your value proposition is and your company's name and email address and link to your site and unique selling proposition. What are the components of an email? Well, this is pretty basic, obviously, but it should, I mean, this is actually pretty important because your subject line and your from line are your most important assets here. If you do them right, you will have a much higher readership. If you do them wrong, you're going to get deleted an awful lot. So those are the first two things that people look at, your from line and your subject line. Right? Think about how you scan for spam. Right? You get all your email coming and you think, oh, God, you know, here's 35 emails, and it's just like I've been gone to lunch. So you want to quickly delete all the spam, right? So it's like boom, boom, boom. Within a second, you're deciding to delete these spam messages. What do you do? First, who looks first at the from line? Okay. Who looks first at the subject line? It's actually about half and half. Usually, I look at the subject line first, but sometimes I look at the from line first. But when I'm in a from line mood, I'm going to look through all the from lines. If I'm in a subject line mood, I'm going to look through all the subject lines. And then if something looks like it might be genuine, I'll look at the from line if I'm first looking at the subject line. Does that sound like how most people do? Yeah. So what if you get it wrong? What if you get a subject line that sounds like spam? Like, you know, right, delete. So we got the two line as well, which is not as important, but you could screw that one up. What would be a way you could screw that up? Wrong email address, of course, so that wouldn't ever get delivered. A blank two line, exactly, or a two line of themselves, where they've used the BCC, the blind carbon copy, as their huge list of email addresses. Yeah, that a lot of spam filters will catch that. It won't even end up in their inbox. Then we got, of course, the message body itself. Message body should have, you know, if it's a promotional message, then it better have a really compelling offer and call to action right there, very quickly, within the first few lines, without having to scroll out of your preview pane to see it. An email newsletter should contain a header, a table of contents, a welcome, and multiple departments. So how many of you have an email newsletter now? Anyone? Okay, just a couple of you. Of you that have an email newsletter now, do you have a table of contents to the email? Okay? No? And what about you? No? Okay. So that's very useful because it gives you a quick snapshot without having to scroll out of the preview pane what the main value propositions of that particular newsletter are going to be. And, of course, privacy statement, disclaimer, and unsubscribe instructions are essential. How do you measure success? How do you feel like, okay, this is really doing it for me? Yep.
You said multiple departments.
Yeah, department, I mean like a section. You know, a section, let's say that you have a recipe of the month, you have a special package, vacation package or whatever, you have, what's happening at the end, you know, those are three different departments right there, three different sections. So how do we measure success? Unsubscribe rates, hopefully that's low. Bounce rate, hopefully that's low as well, right? So a bounce is when somebody doesn't actually either live at that email address anymore, or their spam filter makes it look like that. Don't assume that just because you got a bounce that they have actually left that account, that they've moved on, because what happens is that spam filters will fake it and make it look like that email address no longer exists. So if it looks like your email is a spam message, you get a bounce back, it looks like that person is no longer there, a lot of times it's a spam filter. So you want your bounce rate low. You want your unique open rate to be as high as possible. So unique opens are different from total opens. Okay, what's a unique open? Anyone have a guess at that? It's individuals opening your email. Okay, so let's say that I have 10 unique opens, and I've got 100 total opens. Okay, so a total opens of 100, unique is 10. So what could this be? It could be 10 people. Each opening up the email 10 times, that's one option. It could be one person opening it up 90 times, the other 9 people opening it up once. You get my drift here? So unique opens, you can pretty much equate to unique individuals.
How do you
How do you know that? Because you look at the IP address. You have an email service provider that automatically does this for you, that just give you these reports. Just like you don't have to figure out how your web logs work, all you have to do is log into your report and see, oh, my traffic is this, that, and such, so forth. You don't have to do the work. You just have to know what's important to read in the report, and who your email provider is should give you these sorts of bits of data. Click through. So unique open, I think, is more important than total open. Because what some people will do is they'll leave a bunch of emails in their inbox for a really long time. And every time they're scrolling through, you know, they hit the arrow keys, and as they're hitting the arrow keys, all the email messages will show up in the preview pane for a few seconds. And what happens is that registers as an open. So you found, oh, wow, these guys are really keen on me because they keep opening up my email. Well, that's what's happening is they're just scrolling through and they haven't deleted you yet. You have your click-through rate, which is an important metric because that actually shows some interest, more so than just the fact that they've opened it because, like I said, preview pane makes an open just kind of semi-automatic, whereas a click-through shows a lot of interest. They've actually bothered to hit the button. So it could be on a particular link. You can measure click-through rate by link. You can say, oh, well, this particular offer worked much better than that one, or this particular recipe worked much better than this particular what's new page or whatever. You know, so if you have three or four clicks, links that you have in an email campaign, you can see which ones really drove the traffic and which ones didn't. But more importantly, you can just see who showed an interest in actually engaging with you at all. Who clicked at all? You know, because if they clicked, they're more interested than people that didn't. No. So the question was, can you find out or measure somehow people who automatically delete it without looking at it? The answer is no. And the reason why I say no is because you could look at their the open rate and see, you can actually see with a lot of email service providers the entire list of who opened and when. Right? So you can do that with Gravity Mail, for example. But what that doesn't mean is that I can assume that people that aren't on the list didn't read my email. Right, so let me give you an example. Let's say that I download my email. I don't open any of them. I just download them, and then I hop on an airplane. Then I read through all my emails. The click-throughs, we're not going to see any click-throughs. You're not going to see any opens from that person because they're on an airplane. They're disconnected from the world. They're reading their emails, and when they're opening the message, it's not going to load up the graphics. And the way an open works is that there's a tiny little graphic. You know, maybe it's one pixel. And when that and it has a unique file name to it. When it opens, or when that image loads, that wasn't open. So that's what happens. There's this tiny little graphic. And when I load up your email, all these beautiful pictures load up and so forth. This tiny little one-pixel graphic loads that says, ah, he opened it or she opened it. Can't do that when you're on an airplane. There's no internet connection. So those people will not have registered as being an open. Yet they read it without the graphics. And then lastly, conversion rate. This is the best measurement, but it's also the most elusive. It's the hardest to track successfully because it follows the user all the way through to the sale, to the booking. You can see this is kind of hard, right? It's hard to do. It's hard to measure conversion rate just on a website, let alone through, you know, starting with an email campaign. Some providers of web statistics programs will allow you to track conversion rate. Most of them don't. Let's see, Google Analytics will allow you to track conversion rate, both on the web and through email. So you've got to embed a special kind of tracking code into the page and into the email campaign. And there's no guarantees that that particular code will execute in the email. But it's better than nothing. So hard to do, but really useful if you can pull it off. As I said, the delete key is just, you know, a hover away. You know, they probably have their finger poised over that delete key, right, when your email's coming in, and they're just looking for any excuse just to hit that. So it's a split-second decision, and the basis of their decision, as I said, really is the from and the subject lines. And your open rate is overstated probably because of that preview pane. They're about to hit the delete key, and as they're doing that, your email is loading into the preview pane, so it counts as an open, and they hit delete before they read any of it. Right. So how do you avoid being put into the bulk folder, the potential junk mail folder automatically. Well, this involves using the right words and so forth. We'll cover this more in the advanced email marketing session, right? So that's later on today. So things like words not to use, HTML code to avoid using, different, subject lines and from lines and words in those two places to avoid and so forth. And there are lots of potential problems that you can very easily avoid by knowing the language to avoid and knowing the tools to use to test your email before it goes out. Yep. So you can run it through a spam filter before you send it and say, oh, that didn't score so well. And okay, I'm going to make some changes here and see what I can do to improve it. Okay, if you want to link, okay, so the question was, is it legal or allowable to cite somebody in your email newsletter or whatever if it's just something on the internet that you didn't get their permission? Well, it's fine to link to it. It's not fine to excerpt large chunks of the article because you did not receive permission. Okay, so if you receive permission, then great, you can do whatever they allow you to do. If they didn't give you permission, then you have to abide by what's called fair use. Fair use is copyright terminology, and you can make small excerpts, very small excerpts, and there's some guidelines around that. Just type in fair use into Google, and you can learn more about it. But what does it hurt just to send an email to the author of that article and say, hey, I want to reference you, and I want to include a couple paragraphs from your article? If you want to link to them, just link to them, no problems there. I mean, that's what the web is for. It's like link all over the place, yeah. So frequency, how often do you send your email campaigns out? Okay, so how many of you send email at all to guests and so forth? Okay, how many of you only send it out when you have confirmed with them and that's it? Okay, how many send it out as kind of an ongoing, let's say, at least every quarter, every 3 months you try? Okay, well, you get credit for trying, yeah. Okay, so anybody send email more frequently than every couple months? Okay, all right. So I'd like to see you guys at least every 2 months or at least, well, maybe every month, but the frequency will depend on your audience. If they are willing to receive a monthly email from you, then great. That's wonderful branding for you. You're going to burn your brand into their heads. If it's once every quarter, there's no way they're going to even remember that they got your email, right? Just think about it. I mean, how many, 300 emails or 100 emails a day or 50 emails a day, and then you get one email from a particular company every 3 months, are you going to remember them? It's like, that's just one drop in a huge bucket. So if you can send it every month or every 2 months, that's much more likely that you're going to get remembered by them. What's the timing for this? What's the magic timing? The studies have been out there that say, oh, Tuesday through Thursday, that's perfect. Or 10 to 2 in the morning to early afternoon. Well, actually, a new study has just come out that says all this is bunk. Because everybody's been reading these old studies, and now it turns out that nobody's sending emails on Friday, because Friday's supposedly such a bad day. And so the best response rates are on Friday now. So Friday and Sunday, it's like, I don't know. It's like trying to chase your tail. It's not going to work. So really, it varies depending on your audience. What response rates are going to work for you? Test some things, right? So this is a medium that you can test. It's beautiful in that way. You can test different subject lines, different from lines, different frequencies, different timings. Length. What's the magic length? How many of you have a really long email that you send out, like more than 300 words? Anyone? Okay. Okay, so a few of you. And you admit it. That's great. And I would stop doing that. I would make it short and sweet because people are very busy. The average read time for an email newsletter is less than 15 seconds. Yeah. Think about that. 15 seconds. So what are your core messages that you can get through to them that are going to make a difference in your life, your business in 15 seconds. 15 seconds, yep. You're thinking, my God, I can't believe it. I've seen studies that, one study that is very very good says 15 to 20 seconds. 15 to 20 seconds for an email newsletter. Yep. Promotional messages are typically less than that. Let's talk a bit about the spam filters. Spam filters are everywhere, right? You can't avoid them. They are going to be the bane of your existence as an email marketer. You're always going to look for ways to get around them because the spammers are always looking for ways to get around them too, and recipients are always trying to protect their inbox. So you've got the obvious stupid stuff like not using the word free or forward to a friend or 3 exclamation points in a row in your subject line. Those are obvious, right? Hopefully should be. But there are a lot of just kind of nuances here that you'd never guess. Like, for example, using the words free access. You know, so those two words together is just pretty much kill your email campaign because, just think about it, spammers who send out porn messages, free access to our porn library for whatever period of time, you know. So every time you see free access, oh, that's probably a porn message. The two line doesn't include the recipient's email address. That was one I already mentioned. Scripts and attachments, those are no-nos because those oftentimes trip the spam filters as well. Anyone send an attachment? Good. Never, ever, ever send attachments, even if it's like a confirmation you want it to not look really beautiful, printed out and everything, because the spam filters will probably eat that. The BCC, okay, so a question, yeah.
When I was talking to, my software people, they said to always send it out to BCC so that somebody doesn't see somebody else's email address.
Okay, so the question was, or the comment was that your tech guy said that to send out emails with using the BCC line.
The reservation guy.
The reservation guy.
My database, send it out under BCC
yep.
So that nobody sees everybody else's email address.
Okay, so... what they're suggesting to you is to not do something they're saying pick the lesser of the two evils, basically. They don't realize how bad a BCC is. Okay, what's worse is putting your entire email list in the two line. That would be the absolute worst, right? So what that person is saying is don't do that. We don't want to give your email list away to every recipient. That would be a bad idea. So putting it in the two line or the CC line does that. The BCC line, at least that hides all the recipients that are in that blind carbon copy list. But it's still a very suboptimal approach. You want the email address of the real person that it's being sent to be in the two line, because that's going to maximize the deliverability. If I've got a spam filter and it doesn't actually show that it's being sent to me, if I don't appear anywhere in the header, right, I'm not in the two, I'm not in the CC, I'm like, okay, what's going on here? It smells like spam, right? So the spam filters will probably kick that into the junk folder.
So how do you send a message to 100 people?
Email service provider, that's where they come in. Because they personalize each email. Yes, exactly. So that's why an email service provider is in business, because they've got the tools and the technology that will automatically put the individual person's email address in the two line. It will put, if you want, their first name in the subject or in the beginning of the body of the email message. You know, you can personalize. And then you can track individually and see, I want a report showing everybody that clicked. I want a report showing what my click-through rates were on these 4 different campaigns. So you can do all that with the email service provider. If we have time, I'll do a quick little run-through of an email tool and just show you the back end of it. You can actually see what you're going to score with Spam Assassin using a free tool. Well, for one thing, a lot of these email service providers, Gravity Mail included, will have a spam scoring tool built right in. So it'll tell you before you hit the send button that you're scoring very high on the spam score and you better rewrite it. And we'll show you the report showing you how and in what ways that's occurred. If you're just doing it yourself right now, you can use the free tool that we've made available at gravitymail.com/spamscore.php. Okay. And by the way, if you want the PowerPoint for this, I'm sorry, there's a lot of slides here, so I didn't want to print out a bazillion, you know, kill a lot of trees for this for handout. So I'll give you a copy of the PowerPoint presentation electronically. I'll email it to you if you just give me a business card and just put on the back of it email getting started. So this spam scoring tool, you paste in your campaign, right? And then it will evaluate it just as if it came into the email box. And anything over a 5 is really kind of dangerous territory. Under a 5, you're probably going to get through most of the time. But again, this tool is only indicative because there are other tools out there. Spam Assassin is just one out of many of the spam filtering tools out there.